Infrastructure resilience. How leading enterprises design for continuity. Infrastructure resilience is a metric that every CIO and CTO should be able to evaluate without hesitation. If your most critical infrastructure component failed right now, how long before the business felt it, and how long before it recovered? For most organizations, the honest answer is uncomfortable. Not because their teams are unprepared or lacking in talent, but because resilience was never designed into the core architecture. It was simply assumed. In the highly interconnected multi-cloud ecosystem of 2026, that assumption is no longer defensible. The enterprises that navigate systemic disruption best share a definitive trait. They have stopped treating resilience as an operational recovery problem and started treating it as a foundational design problem. The distinction matters more than it might appear. Recovery thinking produces disaster recovery, DR plans, backup schedules, and incident response playbooks. Design thinking produces architectures that inherently absorb pressure before the playbook ever opens. 1. Resilience is not the same as redundancy. This is where many enterprise infrastructure strategies stall. Organizations invest heavily in redundant systems, duplicate availability zones, and secondary failover configurations. They check the boxes, run a successful annual compliance test, and conclude they have achieved resilience. In reality, they have addressed only one narrow slice of the problem. True infrastructure resilience operates across three distinct dimensions, and redundancy only addresses the first. Resistance. The ability to withstand an initial shock or component failure without dropping connections or degrading performance. Detection. The depth of observability required to catch silent failures, data corruption, or configuration drift before they cascade. Recovery. The capability to return to baseline operations within tolerances the business can actually sustain without manual intervention causing further panic. When an organization relies solely on redundancy, it assumes that the secondary environment is immune to the issue affecting the primary. However, if a disruptive event is triggered by a corrupted data payload, a flawed software deployment, or an architectural bottleneck, standard redundancy simply replicates the failure across multiple environments simultaneously. You end up running the exact same catastrophe in two places at once. True resilience requires shifting away from blind duplication and moving toward structural isolation, deep observability, and a clear-eyed understanding of which application workflows are genuinely critical to cash flow versus those that merely feel critical. 2. The dependency problem nobody budgets for. One of the sharpest lessons from recent high-profile global outages is that an enterprise's most consequential vulnerabilities are rarely inside its own walls. Industry data compiled by operational risk groups highlights a sobering reality. Third-party dependencies are now the leading cause of major enterprise operational incidents. Enterprise technology stacks are no longer self-contained systems. They are complex webs of integrated SaaS providers, managed public cloud services, API endpoints, and third-party security agents. When a vendor with deep kernel-level or system-wide access pushes an automated update, an organization's resilience posture is only as strong as its ability to contain the resulting blast radius. Most enterprises have not mapped this exposure with the rigor it requires. They know their own internal topology reasonably well, but their third-party dependency graph remains murky. To survive this reality, leading enterprises design their architectures around the architectural pattern of bulkheading, borrowing a concept from shipbuilding where a ship's hull is partitioned into watertight compartments. If one compartment floods, the leak is contained, and the ship stays afloat. In infrastructure, this means ensuring that a failure in a non-essential third-party tool, or an identity provider, cannot laterally cascade to take down core transactional databases. Architects achieve this by implementing circuit breakers in their code and infrastructure configurations. If an external API or monitoring tool stops responding within a millisecond threshold, the circuit trips, the connection is instantly severed, and the core application falls back to a cached, offline, or degraded state rather than hanging indefinitely and exhausting server resources. The practical question for CIOs and CTOs is not whether you trust your vendors. It is whether your architecture assumes they can and will fail, and whether your primary business workflows can run entirely without them. 3. Workload right placement as a strategic choice. The era of dogmatic cloud-first mandates has officially given way to pragmatic sanity. One of the defining infrastructure trends of 2026 is the maturation of workload right placement. Intentionally balancing public cloud, private cloud, local edge environments, and on-premises data centers based on cost predictability, data sovereignty, and above all, resiliency. This is not a retreat from the cloud. It is a sophisticated evolution of cloud strategy. Placement decisions are now made deliberately by design, rather than by default. For resilience specifically, workload placement determines how an organization's risk exposure is distributed. A company that concentrates its entire operational footprint within a single region of a single public cloud provider has made a definitive resilience decision, whether they intended to or not. Leading enterprises evaluate their portfolio through a matrix of failure domains. Workload type: mission critical core, for example, transactions, ledger. Placement strategy: hybrid / sovereign cloud. Resiliency pattern: multi-provider fallback with local on-premises sync. Workload type: high volume compute, for example, analytics, processing. Placement strategy: public cloud. Resiliency pattern: multi-region distribution with auto-scaling limits. Workload type: user-facing apps, for example, dashboards, portals. Placement strategy: edge networks. Resiliency pattern: local caching, completely isolated from database state. By aligning workload placement with specific failure domains, organizations ensure that a systemic issue at a single cloud provider might degrade peripheral services, but it will not paralyze the enterprise's ability to generate revenue. 4. Unifying cost architecture and resilience architecture. Historically, infrastructure performance and cloud spend have been managed by entirely separate teams. Engineers built for peak capacity, while FinOps teams or finance analysts optimize the bills after the fact. The most mature organizations have broken down this silo, recognizing that economic sustainability and architectural resilience are the exact same conversation. Resilience is a non-functional requirement that must be modeled and accounted for before software patterns are embedded and spend is committed. If a resilience architecture is too expensive to run during normal operations, teams will inevitably cut corners, disabling secondary environments or scaling back data replication frequencies to meet quarterly budget goals. Furthermore, resilient organizations design for financial blast radius. They can cleanly answer a question that catches many IT leaders off guard. What does our architecture cost when something goes wrong? This calculation goes far beyond the immediate top-line revenue loss during an outage. It accounts for the financial reality of the recovery path itself, the surge pricing of emergency data egress fees when moving petabytes of data out of an affected cloud region, the compute spikes caused by secondary environments instantly spinning up to handle traffic, the long-term opportunity cost of redirecting entire engineering organizations away from product roadmaps to focus exclusively on post-incident remediation for weeks at a time. When cost and resilience are engineered together, financial limits are built straight into auto-scaling groups, and failover mechanics are optimized to prioritize cost-effective, graceful degradation over brute force resource duplication. 5. From monitoring to deep observability. You cannot recover from what you cannot see. While this sounds like an obvious truism, monitoring is still frequently treated as an operational add-on, a series of dashboards and basic ping alerts configured after code has been deployed to production. The result? When a complex, distributed systems failure occurs, the first several hours of an incident are spent arguing over the scope and root cause of the issue rather than executing a solution. Leading enterprises elevate observability into a foundational design requirement. It requires a deliberate architectural commitment to capturing telemetry across hybrid, multi-cloud environments. The observability standard. True observability means understanding the internal state of a complex system solely based on its external outputs, metrics, logs, and distributed traces. It focuses on tracking the entire journey of a single user request across microservices, databases, and third-party API, rather than simply watching a CPU utilization graph. When observability is baked into infrastructure design, systems are built to generate clear signals when boundaries are pushed. Alerts are designed around symptoms that directly affect the business, such as error rates or latency spikes experienced by users, rather than noisy, low-level system events. This allows engineering teams to detect anomalies early, isolate the affected architectural layer, and trigger automated self-healing protocols long before a human operator ever opens a dashboard. 6. Tested recovery via chaos engineering. Research consistently shows that fewer than one-third of enterprise IT leaders feel genuinely confident in their disaster recovery plans. This deficit is rarely a failure of planning or documentation. It is a failure of live testing. An enterprise that maintains thousands of pages of detailed recovery documentation but only exercises it via desktop walkthroughs or isolated weekend simulations will inevitably discover catastrophic gaps at the worst possible moment. The modern standard for operational continuity has shifted from documented recovery to continuously tested recovery. High-performing infrastructure teams treat recovery the same way agile software teams treat deployment, as an action that is practiced regularly, measured relentlessly against precise target metrics, and continually optimized. This is executed through the discipline of chaos engineering, the practice of intentionally injecting controlled failures into production environments, to prove that an architecture can automatically withstand real-world disruptions. Instead of waiting for a primary network switch or a critical database cluster to fail unannounced, a chaos automation engine might randomly terminate virtual instances or inject artificial network latency during standard business hours. By normalizing failure, engineering teams turn recovery from a rare, terrifying event into a predictable, non-event. Recovery time objectives, RTO, and recovery point objectives, RPO, that exist only on paper, are liabilities that breed false confidence. True resilience is proven through continuous, intentional friction. 7. The corporate governance imperative. Modern infrastructure strategy has moved far beyond the boundaries of the server room. In 2026, enterprise data infrastructure is a board-level strategic asset that directly intersects with corporate risk management, legal liability, corporate finance, and sustainability compliance. Because modern infrastructure decisions impact procurement, vendor negotiation, operational continuity, and capital allocation simultaneously, leaving strategy siloed within independent engineering teams creates a dangerous corporate blind spot. Decisions get made by default or convenience rather than by rigorous design, and the hidden liabilities surface only after a crisis hits. Forward-looking CIOs and CTOs are bridging this governance gap by establishing infrastructure resilience as an explicit, non-negotiable architectural constraint. They are appointing dedicated architecture owners, embedding continuous risk reviews into product life cycles, and providing clear, data-backed operational risk metrics directly to the executive committee. Resilience is no longer structured as an ad hoc emergency committee that convenes to pick up the pieces after an outage occurs. It is maintained as a standing, proactive corporate discipline backed by explicit accountability. The question worth asking now. Infrastructure resilience is not a linear project with a definitive completion date. It is a continuous operational posture that either strengthens over time through deliberate architectural investment or degrades quietly through accumulated technical debt, unmapped vendor dependencies, and untested assumptions. The enterprises that successfully absorb market and technical disruptions do not achieve that stability by reacting brilliantly in the middle of a crisis. They achieve it by enforcing resilience as a first-order design requirement long before the pressure ever arrives. Their entire architectural footprint reflects a deliberate structural answer to a single, elegant question. What are we assuming will hold, and what happens to our business if it doesn't? If your current infrastructure roadmap cannot answer that cleanly, that is exactly where we should begin. Partner with Cloud Latitude. The enterprises that handle disruption well don't look for answers during a crisis. They build them into the architecture on day one. At Cloud Latitude, we partner with CIOs and CTOs to comprehensively audit third-party dependencies, eliminate architectural blind spots, and design robust hybrid infrastructures that absorb pressure before your operational playbook ever has to open. Let's design your baseline before the pressure arrives. Reach out to schedule an infrastructure resilience review.